Welcome to Your Music Saved Us, where two friends blast ourselves into the past to relive and recontextualize the alternative Christian music we grew up listening to in the 1990s. My name is Jay, and with me is a man who loves to say ho, 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 and jingle his bells, Clifton. Clifton, how are you?
Ho, ho, ho. And I'm not going to do the other part, because that would be indecent.
Clifton, what are we listening to this week?
So, 2 years after Mariah Carey gave us the last Christmas album we would ever need as an advanced society, Alex Parker decided to ask a bunch of Flying Tart and Flying Tart adjacent artists to pause in the middle of their summers and give us their takes on some of their favorite Christmas songs. And from that, we have the show Christmas in Heaven, a Flying Tart Presents album compilation thing.
Very nice. What year was this?
Yeah. 1996.
Okay, good. So,
2 years after Mariah gave us...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. I should have caught that reference. So 25 years ago. Okay.
Yes.
Here we are.
For Christmas.
So talking about this album, was this hard to find? How were we able to listen to this?
Yeah, some songs were already on YouTube, but not all of them. And some songs were on YouTube a lot, actually, like many different times. So we did upload the entire album, and it is available for anyone to listen to as a playlist on our channel. And we'll probably also put it on Facebook and whatnot before this episode comes out. So you probably guys have probably already seen that we're doing this, and we probably already threw Christmas music at you.
Yeah, I don't think any of these songs, though, actually are on Spotify or any service like that.
No.
I might have missed one somewhere, but most of them are unique to this. And unless, again, mm-hmm. Somebody stuck one of these songs already up on YouTube or something, they're not so easy to find.
No, they are not.
Well, normally this is when I ask you to tell us a bit about the band, but we've established this as a compilation, and rather than going through 14 bands right now, maybe we can do that when we get to the songs themselves. That's
how I've done it in my notes, so that's a good thing.
Good, good. Well, Clifton, I actually think I had this back in the day, and you did not.
Yeah. So when did you find this?
I think I got this when it came out.
Okay.
I'm trying to think back, and I must have seen an ad for this in, like, HM or Seven Ball Existed. I don't know, one of those magazines at the time. Yeah. And it had bands that I knew I liked on it, like Huntington's, Fantasmic, mm-hmm. Sixpence, Joe Christmas. So, of course,
right.
I picked it up. I remember it being all over the place, like, and it... Mm. It still is. Like, there's kind of a variety. In fact, it's more all over the place than I remember it being.
Yes.
There's kind of a large variety of different styles of music on this. I do remember the Sixpence song. I remember 121's Carol of the Bells. I mm-hmm. remember the Deitophobia song, just because I really was catchy and really stuck in my head.
Interesting.
That's really all. I didn't really have, like, any special, like, Christmas memories with this. I do remember, and we'll get to it later, but I do remember when I figured out where Christmas in Heaven, that phrase, came from.
Okay.
Right after getting this album, and I thought that was very funny, but we'll get there.
Well, do you want to get there right now? Where does the phrase Christmas in Heaven come from?
So, Christmas in Heaven is a song from Monty Python's, what year just came out? Maybe 1984-ish, 1983-ish. Last full-length movie, The Meaning of Life. And it's at the end of the film. And it's kind of this, like, what would you describe it, Clifton? I want to say almost like Tom Jones, kind of like this, like, you know, like the way the guy sings. I don't know what the right term for that is, but it's like, it's Christmas in Heaven, like that kind of thing. And the thing that I remember the most being a teenage boy was all the angels were like, I don't know if you'd say topless, but they had this weird thing with, like, either they were, like, plastic boobs or, like, boobs in, like, see-through.
They're definitely wearing something that has plastic boobs on top of their real bodies. It's very weird.
Right. And he even, I think, mentions Monty Python in the credits somewhere in here. I'm pretty sure Alex does. So I'm I think we can be sure that this is what this is named after. So this was hilarious to me that this kind of slipped through the Christian bookstore with this title.
Yeah. So back in the day, did you listen to this at Christmas? Like every year at Christmas, did you get this album out or?
I might have to hear a few of the songs. Because after this, I think that Happy Christmas compilation came out a year or two later, mm-hmm. and I definitely did the same thing with that. So, yeah, possibly.
Have you gone back to listen to this at all since the 90s?
No, because I didn't even know like where it was or anything. But
it was not easy to find.
A few of the songs, and especially one, were strong enough, though, that I definitely remembered. We got a lot of songs to discuss. Let's jump in.
Let's do this.
So the first one, Sixpence None the Richer, You're a Mean One. Mr. Grinch.
Yes.
Clifton, I had obviously heard this before, but you had not. What'd you think?
Yeah, I really liked this take on it, you know. It's very kind of, I mean, it's Sixpence, right? So it's kind of this like acoustic, folky kind of take on this song, you know. Not quite in a, you know, watch out Dave Matthews behind us kind of behind you kind of way, but there is like a violin and a flute sound going on in this song, although they're actually not a violin and a flute. They're actually a mellotron, which is kind of an early pseudo synthesizer kind of thing invented in the mid 60s. And it sounds really good, honestly. But yeah, it's this really great kind of a little bit cute, a little bit kind of like biting kind of take on this song. And Leah Nash's vocals they're on point for this, especially kind of the spoken parts.
You're a monster.
She really handles those well, and it has that kind of, like I said, like kind of like cute, but a little bit cynical, a little bit like stabs at you kind of rendition here. Yeah, but you know, it's probably the most professional thing in this album. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's also a really nice way to start the album.
Agreed.
Speaking of her vocals, I found this at audioperfecta.com, and somebody was talking about this song, and they said, the Sixpence version of Mr. Grinch sounds like a hymn of personal deliverance. The Grinch becomes the symbol of all that's wrong in someone's life. The Grinch is trash, and it's time to take that trash to the curb. And it is, it's almost like a breakup song or something, like the way she's singing about the Grinch. And it's the same lyrics as the original one from the, 1960s. Or something, but just her delivery is kind of snarky and kind of like, I'm done with you. It's really nice. They do a really good job.
In fact, a weird coincidence here is that the original film came out in 1966, and the mellotron, which is does the violin and the flute sounds in this, was also invented in 1966. Hey,
there you go. I love kind of the way, I guess it's like the beginning of the third or fourth verse when the percussion comes in, and it's not sticks just playing on the rim. I'm not sure what it is. They're playing on a block or something like that, but it's real clickety clackety, and it's just.
The three words that best describe you are as follows, and I quote: stink, stank, stunk. You're a vile one, Mr. Grinch. You have termites in your smile. You have all the tender sweetness of a seasick crocodile, Mr. Grinch. Given the choice between the two of you, I take the seasick crocodile.
It's really nice. Like they've done enough in this song to kind of vary it, change it up, make it really nice. And I went back just on what little bit I could find on YouTube and kind of looked at other covers of this, and there's been quite a few post Sixpence, but beforehand I only found one or two, and I didn't think they were nearly as strong as this one. Like, this to me is like kind of a perfect cover because it stays very true to the original melody of the song, but they've definitely like made it their own.
It sounds like a Sixpence song when they're doing right
exactly, but it's still, you also know it's a Grinch song if you've ever heard that before,
right?
So it's It's really nice. And I think this is interesting too, because in my opinion, this is kind of like peak Sixpence. This is in between This Beautiful Mess, which a lot of people kind of think is their best album or one of their best, and right before the self-titled one, which is the one with Kiss Me that, you know, blew up. So this is that kind of crucial time in between. And I don't know, I'm not a Sixpence expert, but I don't know if they recorded anything else kind of between those two albums. They had an EP, but I think that was recorded the same time as This Beautiful Mess. So I don't know if anything else was recorded then, but yeah, this is a great song.
Interesting, yeah.
It's also not easy to find. It was on, they put this on Happy Christmas Volume 2, kind of the, I guess, Tooth and Nail or BEC compilation. And it was also on a thing called Collage, A Portrait of Their Past, which I think was REX, basically like Sixpence got really big, so REX put out a compilation of their first two albums or something.
I thought Flying Tart put out that.
Maybe it was Flying Tart. It was somebody was kind of like, oh, we've got access to their first two before they came big, I think.
Right.
Like, stuck it all on there. But this hasn't been included since on any of their best ofs. I don't know if it's a licensing issue or what. They had Sixpence had a Christmas album that came out in 2008 called The Dawn of Grace. This is not on it, which is a pity because it's a fantastic song.
Yeah, it probably doesn't stand up to the recording quality that they're doing in 2008.
You may be right, yeah. But I really, this one was definitely in my head over and over. And this is one of the ones I definitely remembered from back in the day.
I do want to point out, you know, you said that they did a good job of keeping it very dynamic. And I want to emphasize that, you know, if you've heard this song before, at the end of the verses, or not all the verses, but at the end of some of the verses, and, you know, Dr. Seuss's lyrics kind of slip out of the music and they kind of go on a talking spree for a little while.
Yeah.
And Sixpence does a great job of dropping the music out right there. And as I mentioned before, Leah Nash's, you know, vocals, or, you know, especially her talking here, especially on the one that goes, "Your soul is an appalling dump heap, overflowing with the most disgraceful assortment of deplorable rubbish imaginable."
Right.
And then the way they bring the music back in, always like, it comes in with this nice, like, punch every time.
"You're rotten, Mr. Grinch. You're the king of sin. Flowing with the most disgraceful assortment of deplorable rubbish imaginable. Mangled up and tangled up now."
Stink, stank, stunk, like when they do that and stuff. Yes. Like, it's really...
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree. It's very nice. They did a great job, and I don't know how they thought to cover this one, but it was a really good choice.
That's going to be a question for almost all of the covers on here.
Not the next song, but the most of them, you're right, yes.
Yes, very good point. Let's get on to the next one, then.
Okay, so the next one is the Huntingtons' "Merry Christmas, I Don't Want to Fight Tonight," which is a Ramones cover. So, hey, Huntingtons covering Ramones. How many times have they done that? so...
And there's two other versions of this song. There's a live version on... both of them come off of the Foundations albums, which Huntingtons put out last year on Bandcamp. One of them is on Foundations Volume 5, which is back when the band was called Cricket, and they did a live version on that was on the one called Volume 5, which was called Joe Christmas Playing on the Stereo. And then they have a recorded version on Volume 6, Brown Cow.
And I think Cliffy was singing on both of those, and I'm pretty sure this is Mike or Mikey.
Right, this is Mikey singing.
Right.
Yeah.
"Where is Santa and his sleigh? And tell me, why is it always this way? Where is Rudolph? Where is Mr. Billy? Merry Christmas, merry, merry, merry Christmas. All the children are something they've been hit. My fairies dancing in their head. It's Uncle Friday. And, you know, I honestly had never heard the Ramones version of this till we recorded this, and I went back and listened to it. It's pretty tried and true to that, you know, not surprisingly. To me, it's a little faster than the original
one. It's faster, yeah. I think, though, that what you're going to see here, though, is that yes, this is Huntington's covering the Ramones. And yes, Huntington's whole thing is that they sound a lot like the Ramones, right? There's a whole genre of punk that does this. But all that said, there's still kind of a nice Huntington's charm to this song. And I think that comes through a lot in Mikey's vocals.
Yeah.
When you hear this, you're not going to mistake it for the Ramones, even though Huntington's take pride in being able to sound exactly like the Ramones. This is not that. This comes with some Huntington's charm to it.
Yeah, it's got pretty good energy. I thought when they did that kind of slower part towards the end where it's like, I don't want to fight tonight, that kind of weird rhythm, mm-hmm. I kind of thought it sounded better. The Ramones song, maybe just because it was a little faster.
Yeah, I think this is actually better than the Ramones version.
Yeah, it's nice. It's good. I know you and I are both pretty partial to the Huntingtons, so we're probably not fair judges, but I think they did a good job on this.
Yeah, I agree.
So
all that said, this isn't very much a Christmas song either, though.
Right.
Which we'll run into a few times on this compilation as well, where songs mention Christmas, but they're not necessarily Christmas songs.
Yeah, there's quite a few that it's just like, oh, yeah, okay, mention Christmas. Cool, yeah. It counts.
Yeah, this one is more about I don't want to fight tonight than it is about Merry Christmas.
Right. The next one, and I had to look up how to pronounce them, but it's actually Alika.
How? Why?
I know. If you're thinking of starting a band and you're listening to this, do a name that people can pronounce just by seeing it, like phonetically get it correct, because it's just not going to help you out. But anyway, it's Alika.
Yeah, Chuck, Chuck, Chuck.
Right. Exactly. It's Alika. They're covering Tennessee Christmas by Amy Grant.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just say, Clifton, in my notes, first thing I said, this is a weird shift. The original song is by Amy Grant, and this is nothing like that.
Right. First off, so this Amy Grant song has been covered a ton. Like by the notorious country act Alabama. You know, and it's usually a very boring song.
That's true. This is not boring.
This is not boring. Yeah. And the another version of this song, or maybe the same version of it, from Alika, may have shown up on an unpublished demo that they did in the early 90s. So they may have just had this already ready to go when they were asked for a Christmas song. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
So it starts off with a very repetitive and electronica rendition of Hark the Herald Angels Sing. Which is not honestly much to write home about, and it goes on for about a minute and a half. But then in a minute and a half, you kind of get this kick in of Amy Grant's song. And Amy Grant's original is very, it's slow and it's kind of somber.
More than this, for sure.
Yeah. Whereas this is, they're having a good time with this. Like they're, this song, compared to the Amy Grant version, this sounds like a celebration.
Okay, yeah.
The kind of idea here with the Tennessee Christmas is like, oh, I wonder what Christmas is like somewhere else, but I only have my one here in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And the original performance of this is kind of like, you know, that dreamy kind of like, oh, I wonder how other people are doing, but I guess I shouldn't think about that because everything's good here too, you know?
Right, right.
And whereas this one's just like, if I had to act out the same thing here, I would say that this version is, I wonder how other people are having it on Christmas, but you know what? Christmas is good here too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
You know, it has a lot of energy.
Another 10 to Tennessee.
all that said, it's not like, you know, this like unimaginable like take on it. It's just faster and electronified, basically.
So,
but then,
oh yeah, okay, good. You're getting to it. I hear the but then. So, no, go ahead, because I think you're going where I'm going.
Something very weird happens at 3 minutes and 45 seconds in. I'm going to play that here.
Exact same in my notes.
Here we go. We get like this industrial slash hardcore breakdown of the bridge. And you know what? It sounds good.
Does it really add anything?
Well, I don't know that it adds anything, but let's keep listening here for a second because I think this is what sounds good. The guitars from like the industrial slash hardcore guitars stay in, and then the electronica comes back on top of it. I think that works really well. I think it gives it a nice intensity and it really separates it from what it could have just been along, you know, just could have just kept going on and on and on the same way. But it kind of it provided a good break in the song. And once you layer the two back together, I think it really creates something different.
Yeah, I like it together. I had Alika's first album that came out on Flying Tart / Liquid Disc because they had some weird distribution thing. And I don't remember a ton about it, but I remember that type of sound where they're mixed together and liking a couple of the songs on there quite a bit with that. It's kind of weird. It was a little too dancey for me without the guitars. The guitars by themselves were just a little too much on its own. So it was kind of it's a nice mix when they're together.
Because other than that, if it had been all one or the other, it would have been like, okay, that was okay.
Yeah. And if you haven't seen yet on this album, this album's kind of going to do that. It's going to be a little bit rock song kind of thing, and then it's going to go into some kind of weird electronic, maybe not weird, but electronic type stuff, and then back to rock. That's kind of the pattern for the most part. There's another couple quiet songs, but there's quite a bit of electronic-ish stuff in here.
Definitely, you could tell that Alex was dabbling in his fingers into electronica at this point, right?
Right. Yeah, he definitely was a fan. The next one, and I never knew if I was saying this band right, but the Spivvies. Am I saying that right?
That's how I always said it.
Okay, the Spivvies, and this is an original song, There's No Christmas on the Moon. 3, 2, 1, go!
A long time ago, a Christmas meant a lot of snow, but there's no trace of that around here. Well, Mom and Dad moved us to the moon, they said we'd learn to like it soon, but things just aren't the same around here. And now I'm ready to go back. The moon's real cool, but there's a lack of any Christmas around here.
What'd you think, Clifton?
Yeah, so our first original song. I think it also may appear on Seven Balls Gas Collection number 4. Okay. Spivvies weren't hugely popular back in the day, but if you heard them, you know who they are. They kind of have a similar take to punk rock as Huntington's, where they're kind of like doing this Ramones type thing. But they do it with clean guitars and also add in a very kind of, you know, the harmonies and the guitar solos that harken back to early rock and roll. Which is what inspired the Ramones to do what they did, but this is kind of a more true mixture of that kind of Ramones-esque punk with early rock and roll. That's kind of their style. And that said, this is a Spivvy song.
Yeah, it's really nice. I love the way it starts with that clip. It's from Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
All this trouble over a fat little man in a red suit.
It's a great way to start the song. And then the song kind of stays in that space theme because it's There's No Christmas on the Moon, and it's literally about being on the moon and there's no Christmas.
Yeah.
But it's really nice. It's short. It's another, it's kind of one of those, like, I don't know if this is really about Christmas, but...
It's Christmas-esque, you know, it's about a family that moves to the moon, and once you're on the moon, you don't have Christmas, because Santa Claus can't get to the moon.
All right, you're right. It's more Christmassy than some of the other ones we're going to get to, for sure. But it's fun, it's nice, I like that it's an original song for this.
So here's an interesting thing. When I was, so I spent days researching these songs, everybody. And I found over and over again, either radio stations that had listed this as part of their. If you don't know, like college stations, a lot of times have to list what they play, just part of the rules of the airplay. So I found a lot of college radio stations that played this song around Christmas. I found a lot of people on Reddit and on blogs that put this song on their, hey, here's my custom Christmas mix for you guys to listen to. Yeah, I even found it on one or two Spotify playlists, but it's not on Spotify. So like someone just put it from their own collection onto a playlist and you can't play it. So congratulations.
Like one of those Christmas deep cuts for people kind of thing. Okay. I could see that. Exactly. It's a very nice, it's a nice song. I think these Bivvies put out one, maybe two, maybe an album and an EP.
Two albums.
On Jackson Rubio. And I don't think their first one came out till the next year. So
yeah, I think you might be right, yeah.
And so maybe we'll be, I think it said they're free agents in the book for this. Andy Prickett from the Prayer Chain did produce this song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was nice. It's a good song. It's kind of fun.
I tried to transcribe the lyrics, but it's just so, it's too fast.
Yeah.
Like I it would have taken me forever because it's so fast.
Christmas was a long time ago. Some snow. There's no Christmas around here. Yeah. Something like that. I don't know.
All right. Well, let's keep moving because there are 14 songs in this. We got 10 more to go.
Next one is Fantasmic playing Come On, Ring Those Bells. What do you think of this one, Clifton?
Yeah, so this is Fantasmic, and in parentheses, featuring Tess Riley and her orchestra, which is what this is. This is the first song on this compilation that I think it doesn't sound at least kind of tongue-in-cheek. I think it's the first, like, serious attempt at a song. And it's... If you've never heard Fantasmic or Tess Riley, her vocals and the vibrato on those vocals is just fantastic.
Everybody likes to take a holiday. Everybody likes to take a rest. Spending time together with a family. Sharing lots of love and happiness. Come on, ring those bells. Light the Christmas tree. Jesus is the King. Born for you and me. Come on, ring those bells, everybody.
And it has this like kind of 1970s Americana folk interpretation of old-timey music going here. So, you know, it may not be a surprise that I love the song because it literally feels like it's going to fall apart in any moment all the way from the start to the finish of the song. Which gives it kind of this like amateurish, like a couple people sitting on a porch, you know, playing old timey music. Not Deliverance, but like in a cute and nostalgic way, you know. but yeah, it's a gorgeous song. There's a couple points that I really want to point out, which is one of them is there's a vibraphone solo kind of thing on here that Tess Riley does.
Jesus, we remember it's your birthday.
And the way her voice breaks right there with the "Come on, ring those bells" is just, ugh. It does me in. It's great.
Yeah, I really like it. I think I noticed, so her voice cracks there. I think I noticed a mistake in the little vibraphone part.
Oh, yeah.
Too. It would not shock me if they did this in just like one or two takes. Like, yeah. Just like, but I agree. That's what I wrote down. I said, God, I love Tess Wiley's voice. It yeah. just is so nice for this. And, you know, this is a cover of a song that came out in the late 70s by a singer named Evie Tornquist. It was a CC.
Right. So it's actually written originally in 1968.
Oh, but it didn't get recorded yeah. until the 70s, right?
Right, yes.
And so, but the original, the interesting thing for me was, like, the original version comes out from this, I guess, Christian singer, like, CCM-type singer in the late 70s.
Yeah, and, like, I found videos of her, like, performing with Billy Graham.
Yeah, and the original version is much more doom, da-doom, 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 da-doom. Yeah. Like, I don't... kind of
very 70s like country,
yeah, like 70s yeah. country, yeah, it's a good way to put it.
But also she's Swedish, right? So we're getting some of that influence back into it, you know.
Well, and the weird thing is, like, it may be the same for you, Clifton, you know, I grew up a Christian kid, and so I heard this song a lot, and I kind of thought this was just like a classic Christian song. Like, I didn't realize this was kind of just a narrow,
I've
like,
never heard this before. This
really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is the first time I've heard this song.
That's funny. No, I totally heard this a lot. And I think I just thought, like, oh, it's a typical Christmas song, you know, like half the others you sing. Nope. It definitely was like a Christian Christmas song. So I don't know, yeah. listeners, maybe you've never heard it either. This is a good way to start with it if you've never heard it before.
So I want to point out that Fantasmic released on their own, released a version of this song on like a single, like B-side type thing. And they listed it as "Come on, Ring Those Bells, Damn It."
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. There's notes in the recording, in the liner notes, that say that this was recorded on September 16th, 1996, on a hot summer day in Texas.
I kind of like that they put the actual date now that, you know, mm-hmm, 25 know. Years later.
Yeah.
One other thing about this is Tess Wiley kind of became known because she was the guitarist in Sixpence for a little bit and recorded their second album, This Beautiful Mess, with them. And she left shortly after that, before Sixpence recorded the song that we talked about earlier on here, the Grinch song, and kind of started doing Fantasmic. But this is only maybe like a year after she's in Sixpence, maybe not even that long.
Right.
Yeah. One other interesting piece of trivia, Clifton, about Tess Wiley is I really liked that she had a song on Artcore Volume 2, maybe one or two. I don't remember which one. I really liked it. And so my first year at Cornerstone in 96, I went to see her play. And here's the crazy thing now. she played, and I remember she pointed to the guys playing with her later, and she's like, this is, and I don't remember which one she said, but so-and-so, they're in a band called Mineral. I'm like, like Jay later would have killed brother, to see Mineral. I never got to see Mineral back in the day, only like the reunion stuff, but I loved them just a couple years later. And anyway, it's just funny how these things work out.
Her brother is Gabe Wiley.
Right, who played in Mineral.
The drummer for Mineral.
Papa
and Broco,
Known.
Papa Known. Yeah. And I think I think they're actually from San Marcos, just right south of Austin here.
Originally. Okay, right.
Yeah. She also had a song on the Emo Diaries Chapter 2.
Yeah, and it was like the hidden track. Right. Yeah, okay. But I love her voice. She still is making music, actually. She moved to Germany.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it's still putting out albums and stuff. So check it out. There's lots out there. I believe she is on Spotify, at least some of it.
That is on Spotify. So it's pretty much fine anywhere. Yeah.
All right. Well, we got to get back to the kind of electronic stuff. So,
this song.
Yeah. I know Clifton loves this one. Let's go to number 6. This is the Echoing Green. Do They Know It's Christmas Time?
All right. So this is originally by the charity band Band Aid from 1984, written by Bob Geldof and Midge Ury. I don't know how you say his name. This is the We Are the World people, basically.
Yeah.
And they wrote this song in order to raise money to feed people in Ethiopia, I think, that was going through a drought at the time.
Right.
So, of course, it has, like, the original version is, you know, just like We Are the World, it has, like, you know, Bono and Phil Collins and Criss Cross and, you know,
I think like Sting and Boy George. And yeah, pretty much any
anyone that you can think of. Marilyn. Yeah.
Any like famous Irish or English musician in 1984.
The guys from Duran Duran.
Is in it. Yeah.
Cool and the Gang. Paul Young.
And it's not, you know, the original one, it's not a terrible song. In fact, it grew on me the more I listened to it.
Is it not, though, Jay? Is it not a terrible
song? Well, I'll be honest. Okay, how about this? I liked it better than this version.
I did, too.
Okay. Maybe my bar was really low. I don't know.
Yeah. This song is written to raise money for the people in Ethiopia going through the drought. And it did. It raised a lot of money. Mostly because people are stupid, I think. But the song is terribly offensive.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
yeah, and it's not racist, I don't think, but it's offensive in like this Western colonialist mindset of, oh yeah, you know, those people in Africa, because everything sucks there, right? Because I mean, it's just like that's what Africa does, right? It sucks, you know.
Yeah,
like,
it definitely seemed to kind of have that ethnocentric, yeah, like we're better attitude. Yeah.
And in fact, to the point that they rewrote some of the lyrics, the song's been re-recorded several times for some reason. Like, not covered, but re-recorded by the original artist to once again raise money for similar things. And I want to go through a few of the lyrics here that make it particularly offensive. Okay, let me just read the second verse. If I could say a prayer and pray for the other ones, and by other ones they mean the Africans. Okay? If I could say a prayer and pray for the other ones, at Christmas time, it's hard. But when you're having fun, there's a world outside your window, and it's a world of dread and fear, where the only water flowing is the bitter sting of tears. And the Christmas bells that ring there are the clanging chimes of doom. Well, tonight, thank God it's them instead of you. And the beautiful part of that is that you get this in the original version. Bono sings that well, tonight, thank God it's them instead of you. And so you get his like really like powerful emotional vocals on that, you know. And it's a little terrifying, I think. And so the chorus comes next and it says, and there won't be snow in Africa this Christmas time. The greatest gift they'll get this year is life. When nothing ever grows, no rain or rivers flow, do they know it's Christmas time at all? They got a little bit of shit for that, do they know it's Christmas time at all? But I think that's the one part that I think is understandable, where they're saying like, oh, it's so horrible there, do they know it's Christmas time? Okay, fine, whatever. But here's the thing. There won't be snow in Africa this Christmas. Africa is mostly in the southern hemisphere.
Right.
So most of Africa has Christmas in the summer.
Well, true. It depends. Yeah, if they're celebrating December 25th, I guess it is their summer.
So what the hell? You know, and this is where the offensiveness isn't necessarily like a racism or anything outright. It's just kind of this, it's like a cultural, oh, you know, those, it's the other people part thing, right? It's, I mean, like it's just like
ignorance.
Say unrepentant ignorance, maybe even, right?
Right.
Just like, I don't know, I don't care enough to know. I'm gonna write a song about it, but I don't care enough to know anything to write the song with. Anyways, so they took a lot of shit for this song. And then you might be asking yourself, okay, why did the Outgoing Green decide to cover it?
Yeah, I was wondering this too, of all the songs to choose.
Right. That's all I got. There's some people online suggest that maybe they did it as a joke. But there's nothing in the rendition here that seems like a joke. Like, it's just, it's a very straightforward and honestly kind of boring rendition of this song. And it's a world of dread and fear, where the only water flowing is the bitter sting of tears. And the Christmas bells that ring there, all the clanging chimes of doom. Well, tonight, thank God it's them instead.
Well, and in my opinion, they left out the best part of the song as far as just catchiness, which is the last, like, minute and a half where they talk about feed the world, let them know it's Christmas time again, feed the world, all that. None of that's in. And it has a, like, right, it has a nice little kind of melody, like a little, I guess, keyboard type melody with that in the original song. None of that's in this version. It's like they just left out, to me, the catchiest part of the song.
And it's not because they were trying to give us a shorter song, because their song is still longer than the original.
Yeah. Well, they start with some weird, what is that instrument at the beginning of their cover? Like some distorted flute or something? It's some weird.
It's just a synth that's kind of doing some like atmospheric kind of whoosh. And then, yeah, a synthy flute comes in, you know, but it sounds more like a synth than it does a flute, but you can tell they're trying to go for flute, just in a very not, I don't know, you know, whatever. That's fine.
It's, yeah. I don't know. It's definitely not my favorite track on here. Maybe my least favorite.
Yeah, very worth skipping.
So shall we move on?
Next. Yes.
So next is Duralux, which is the artist formerly known as Fluffy, doing Feliz Navidad. And yeah, what'd you think of this one, Clifton?
So I want to put as much effort into my description of this as Duralux put into their cover of Feliz Navidad. This isn't the Spanish language Christmas classic Feliz Navidad. This is Duralux playing some dark chords over every once in a while kind of mumbling Feliz Navidad. And then at the end, they kind of say, I wish you a Merry Christmas from the bottom of my heart. And that's it. But you know what? It's a good song. Like musically, it's kind of like this nice, like post-punk song. I think it's musically a very nice song.
Yeah, like, I don't think it has anything to do with the original, like,
no,
other than they said the same words, but I don't think the chord progressions are the same, like, nothing is the same.
For all I know, I don't know enough about Duralux, but for all I know, this could be another Duralux song, and just instead of their vocals, they just put these things in it, you know, the words Feliz Navidad every once in a while. And, like, let me play it for you here, because it's not like it's even exciting, it's just like every once in a while they just say Feliz Navidad. That was it. I don't know why. The guitars are rocking though. It's great. I mean, it's an enjoyable to listen to song.
Yeah,
but I don't know what's going on.
When I first, back in the day, I think I skipped it a lot because it was just kind of this long intro and I wasn't sure. But man, around like 50 seconds in, when that full band comes in, it sounds good. Like
it does.
Almost reminds me of something else, and I can't put my finger on it. But it's a really nice song, but yeah, it really has nothing to do with Christmas. It's not really a cover. I don't even know. They reference the original one, like they credit it in the booklet, and I'm like, really, guys? I don't really know that you even needed to do that, but whatever.
Right.
It's nice.
Is this is this the first time is this the first time Chris Colbert has showed up on the album?
I'd be shocked because he does a lot of like behind the scenes stuff on a lot of albums. I have had to have done something else so far. We'll have to go back and look at what all we've done, but usually like mastering something or working on something, he's involved. Yeah. I will say this did make me want to go back and listen to more Duralux and Fluffy.
Yeah.
because I really like the way this sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Colbert still works in the industry, by the way. Like,
yeah.
he still does this for a living.
Right. And Fluffy to Duralux was his main, like, probably creative band out thing, right? But even at that time, you know, he was an engineer, he was a producer. He's very important to the Flying Tart story, and he's very important to this. Like, half of this comp wouldn't exist if it weren't for him, probably.
Right.
But we'll get into that as we get into those other songs.
Yeah. So, yeah, I liked this song quite a bit. It's kind of out in left field as far as being mm-hmm. related to Christmas or actually being a cover, yep. but it's fun.
I'm curious about why. I mean, I guess you could just. I was gonna say I'm curious why they did the Feliz Navidad thing, but then I'm like, well, I guess they wanted it to be Christmassy. That's fine.
Yeah. I guess I gotta get the sense they were just like dicking around and we're like, okay, here we go. This is our song. Put it on there. Okay. You know.
Yeah.
So the next one is Irwin Icon, and it says in parentheses featuring Russ Long. And the song is called Tiffany's Christmas Tree. And I'll just say this band. When I saw featuring Russ Long, I was like, oh, this must be a well-known band featuring somebody else. But no, I can only find one other song that this band ever did, and it was on another compilation. So with Russ Long on that one, too. So I don't know, like, really know nothing, very little about this band. This is an original song.
The other compilation, by the way, is the other compilation is a tribute to Brian Wilson called Making God Smile. And the Irwin Icon did a tribute to Sloop John B.
Yeah. But that was also
It
was also kind of another like, Christian artist compilation.
Right. Doing those. Yeah. I forgot who the record label was for that, but yeah, it's basically a bunch of Christian artists covering, you know, Brian Wilson classics.
Yeah.
Beach Boys, but yeah.
Okay. So, well, let's talk about the song because it is an original. What do you think?
Yes. Another original one here. Oh, I forgot to mention that Russ Long engineered Steve Taylor's Squint album, and he produced the now famous Newsboys feature film Down Under the Big Top.
But to give him a little more credit, he has done some pretty cool stuff after that. I mean, I know he's worked with Wilco and some other maybe more respectable. Yeah.
Yes. So this has to me it has a very 80s, it's a very 80s sounding song with kind of like minimal electronic instrumentation behind, and the vocals are kind of the main thing that's going on here. And the vocals are kind of like this a little bit breathy, you know that 80s, late 80s kind of like Billy Idol and, you know, influenced vocals where it's kind of monotone and breathy. But then it's also overdubbed with kind of a harmony of that same thing going on at the same time in a way that kind of makes it feel like super processed and fake.
Right.
I don't know what to call it. It's a good song. Like, it's easily top three songs of this comp for me.
Yeah, it really grew on me the more I listened to it, and especially when I started really paying attention to the lyrics, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a second. But yeah, it's a nice song, and again, it's an original, and it kind of makes me wish Irwin Icon had done more or had more available out there somewhere.
Yeah, I think the first time I listened to it, I just thought to myself, oh, that's not a bad song. But you know, when we were originally talking about this, as we approached this, we didn't know how to handle a comp because we haven't done a comp yet. And it's like, I was trying to pick songs to cover. And I eventually just said, okay, we're gonna cover all the songs, because it felt like I was picking songs not to cover more than I was picking songs to cover, right? And but all the songs have things we can say about them, you know, short or long. And so eventually I was like, ah, you know, maybe we don't need to talk about this song. But as I listened to it, you know, it just, yeah, as Jay said, it grew on me, and I ended up enjoying this. Let's talk about those lyrics.
Yeah, let's get, because that made me enjoy it more. So tell us what this, it's kind of a story, right? So tell us what happens.
Yes. So I think this is what's going on. The protagonist slash antagonist slash the person telling the story is working at like a Christmas tree farm, maybe.
Yep.
And freezing off his behind. And a lady walks up to him and says, what do you have for under $35? Like a Douglas fir or an evergreen. I really like the next line there, by the way, is I could barely see my breath in this tender scene. I know she felt the chemistry. And then she asked if they deliver the Christmas trees. So he says, you know, he got her name and address, and he started a plan for how to impress her. And then we go to the chorus. Both Jay and I took a shot at these lyrics and separately, and neither of us could get the first line of the chorus. So I don't know what the first line of the chorus is, but he says something. And then now she comes downstairs on Christmas morn. Imagine the look of surprise and the wonder dancing in her eyes. That's exactly what I would be under Tiffany's Christmas tree.
I took it. That's exactly why I will be under Christmas.
Oh, why I will be. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's going to be there, which is what I started going. Oh, okay. This is getting creepy.
And it does get creepy, but at least nicely, in like a very self-effacing way, I think, you know. I'm like, yeah,
well,
yeah,
we'll see.
So the second verse is, the day finally arrived, I jimmied the locked and stepped inside. The road to Wonderland I was wandering, trying not to let the sleigh bells ring. I didn't mean her any harm, I guess I tripped the silent alarm. And then we go into another version of the chorus, but this version's changed a little bit. And it says, as she came down the downstairs on Christmas morn, imagine the look of surprise and the wonder dancing in her eyes. That's exactly where they found me, under Tiffany's Christmas tree.
And he references something about flashing lights too, which I think he kind of plays off earlier in the song, like Christmas lights, but this was clearly like cop car lights.
Yes. Way I took it. When my blinking lights and tinsel shine, she will think of me doing fine tonight. That's the lines.
Yeah.
So kind of the story here is that, you know, he was going to impress her by sneaking the Christmas tree into her house and being
hiding under it.
But then he ends up under it because I guess he dropped it on himself or something like that. And then the last version of the chorus is, I guess maybe he's in jail now, because it says, you know, as she came downstairs on Christmas morn, I can see the look of surprise and the wonder dancing in her eyes. In my mind, I will always be under Tiffany's Christmas tree. So he's thinking fondly back on this experience now. I don't know. It's a weird song, but it works very well in the song.
It does, and it's funny, and it's original, and I like that they put the time into it to kind of develop this little story. Yeah,
yeah.
It's a good song.
All that said, it's not cute to break into someone's house.
Right.
Especially a woman who, you know, you have threatening intentions towards, whether or not you recognize that your intentions are threatening.
Yeah, we're not condoning this, by the way.
No.
All right, let's go on, because we got a lot of songs still.
Yeah,
number 9, 121, Carol of the Bells.
So this is the original 121 lineup, and they recorded it in the same studio as they recorded in the year King Uzziah died. I think it's the only traditional Christmas song on the album, except for the intro of Aaliyah's song where they did Hark the Herald Angels Sing, right?
Oh, good point. Yeah, it is kind of the only traditional one, although not done in a traditional way, but you're right.
Right. What you need to know about this song is that it's a very straightforward but harder side of punk rendition of Carol of the Bells. And the first few times I listened to this, I actually listened to it while I was driving, because I did a lot of driving in the last 2 weeks. And with the road noise, it was honestly just kind of like, what was that? And I guess they kind of played Carol of the Bells, but I don't know why. But when I got back, you know, and listened to it with headphones really loud, you know, the dun 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 dun, that part of Carol of the Bells, mm-hmm. The bass is doing that. Although I kind of wonder if they recorded the bass much slower and then sped it up, because it's really hard to pull off. Like if you hear how fast it's going, let's listen to how fast that bass is going. So that's dun 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 dun, and to fret all of that on the bass, that would be impressive that fast.
You know, I kind of wish they had raised the level of the bass a little bit in that, because I honestly didn't notice that till you said that just now.
Yeah, it's in fact my exact next note is, but it isn't loud enough.
Yeah, because I've listened to this many times and never really noticed that bass line separately, because the snare is like da, 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 you know, it's so
yeah, and it really there's really just a few. Yeah, and there's really just a few moments where kind of everything else quiets down that you really get that bass line. I think the vocals are a kind of fun punk take on the vocals for this, for Carol the Bells. Here's why it doesn't amount to anything. Because Carol of the Bells is about layers. And it's about layers playing off of each other. And they have the bass doing the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. But you're supposed to then have another instrument playing in contrast to that.
Right.
And they never do. The guitar's going, but who cares? Like, it's not doing the contrasty thing. And even when they bring in the guitar to do something, to a solo-type thing later on, which I'll play here right now, it doesn't do anything that's in contrast. It just does this kind of boring, like, drawn-out notes thing. So you don't ever get that contrast that is kind of the hallmark. It's the soul of what Carol the Bells is, and it never happens in this.
Yeah, I really wish I could have heard the bass more. It's not bad. I said in my notes, I wrote, it's a fun cover, but not one I'll go back to a lot.
If they had just brought in those guitars doing something in that, to that playing against the bass, it would have worked well. And I even looked up other punk covers of this song, and there's some good punk covers of Carol the Bells, but because they never did anything with the guitars, it just doesn't work.
Let's go on to the next song, which is Deatophobia, She Won't Be Home, which is a cover and a song by Erasure, another song I'd never heard before till I went and listened to it to kind of better get a sense of this one. But what do you think, Clifton?
So there's a cover of Erasure, which is kind of like this late 80s, it's original Christmassy ballad by them. And, you know, this is a definite, like, electronification of that song. And if I needed this song in my life, this would be the version I want, not the late 80s version. But I don't need this song in my life.
So I really think this is catchy, though. This is one of the ones that stands out the most off the album from when I listened to the 90s. Really? Just... I don't know, that melody really got stuck in my head a lot, and I just liked the pace and just, I don't know, the distortion right there. I don't know, for some reason, 16-year-old Jay really liked this, and I still think it's pretty catchy.
And you're not alone. Other people really liked the song. When I was looking around at the few things I could find about this, other people liked this cover as well.
I like how there's kind of no filler on this. It just starts straight into the verse. in the first chord. This is not one where you're like, oh god, they did a minute of weird synth stuff at the beginning. It's just like, nope.
Because they've done, all the other electronica stuff so far has had way too much intro.
Yeah, this is like, you know, bare bones. They go right into it.
3 minute pop song.
Yeah, it's nice, and I agree with you. It's definitely, I think, better than the original.
Yeah, and that I will say, like, it's, I mean, there's clear talent here. There's clear, I guess it takes us back to that question of why did you cover this song? You know, right.
Of course, I imagine this type of band is probably influenced by Erasure or bands like that. So right, they probably just liked the song and were like, sweet, we get an excuse to do this, you know?
Yeah, in fact, I think this also showed up on a split album they did in 2000. Or maybe it's not a split album. I can't tell. It's hard on hard to say. It may just be a split that they did with other versions, other incarnations of the same band under different names.
Okay.
Massive Vivid.
Yeah, they changed their name right after this, but I don't think they ever got completely set.
This also shows up on Knotheads, because Mike Knott was involved in this at some point or somehow.
Okay.
Deitophobia is supposedly the first Christian industrial band to be released in the major Christian market.
Okay, I can see that. Yep. It's not even the last one on this album, though.
Nope.
But before we get to that, let's go to the next song, which is Steve Hindelong and Chris Colbert, called "Tis the Season of Excess." And this might be, is this the weirdest song? In a way, it might be the weirdest song. I don't know. What do you think, Clifton?
Probably so, yeah. Yeah, so this is an original song. Okay, so Steve Hindelong is from the choir. And as we've already talked about, Chris Colbert is a fluffy Duralux. We actually found an interview with Steve about this song that was done by the Low Profile podcast. So basically, Steve said that he'd been working with Chris Colbert, and he really enjoyed working with him because Chris liked to really put a lot of sonic tension, he said, in his songs. So basically, Alex came to them and said, hey, we'll give you $500 to do a song for this compilation. And Steve set out to write kind of a folkish, children song-ish type Christmassy song here, and then gave it to Chris to mess with. And where Steve's idea came from is he said that Mike Knott had an idea for something called Skinny Santa, where he would dress someone up as a very chic Santa that's skinny and have two sexy elves, one on the other arm. I don't know why Mike had that idea or how it had been put to use, but he had the idea.
Well, Mike had a song, and Steve thought, on just to butt in real quick, on Rockin' in a Bomb that we did cover, you know, one of our first episodes, he had a song called Skinny Skins. I'm wondering if it's related to Skinny Santa. Anyway, I don't know. Mike likes to feature skinny guys in songs or something. I don't know. But anyway.
So Steve thought it would be funny to have a Santa that lectured people about the things that they do wrong. Instead of just saying you're naughty or nice, he would give them very dry lectures about the things that they're doing wrong. So he wrote this song. He said that his wife hated it, and she didn't think it was funny. And I'm going to quote him here. He said, sometimes you have the opportunity to do a really weird painting, and people can hang it on their wall or not. That's it.
I'm really glad you found that interview, because it did definitely help me understand this a little more.
Yeah. Okay, so let's explain the song a little bit. So it starts out with kind of this, like, kind of drone that honestly reminds me a lot of, like, the drone that, like, shoegaze songs start out with, but it doesn't become that. It becomes kind of this, like, cute song with this fantastic drone all the way through. Like OCS. Did you ever listen to OCS?
I have no idea what that is.
Okay. It's like the same band that's the OCs. The OCs are kind of like a garagey, kind of lo-fi type thing. And OCS is pretty much the same band, but it's kind of their more like bedroom.
The OC's like O H S E E S.
Yes.
Sorry. Yeah, I do know who that is. I thought you meant OC. Sorry. Got it. Anyway, continue.
Right. But their other like more like bedroom side band is just OCS.
The letters. Okay.
Okay.
Got it.
Which is the same thing. Right. So this kind of reminds me more of that, like some stuff that OCS did. Here's what I think is going on. I think that originally Steve recorded probably like a 2-minute, like cute acoustic guitar song. And then Chris spliced it up with his drums and drone kind of layered on top. So I want to play a portion of it here where we can kind of hear Steve's original acoustic guitar song drop out and then come back in. So we don't hear it right now. About to come back right now.
Lend an ear to the voice of reason. 'Tis the season of excess. Send up a cheer to the voice of reason. Skinny Santa, laws will bless the world with stir.
So I think that you can almost think of this as like a remix of an acoustic guitar song with drums and drone kind of on top of that original song. All that said, it's super weird.
Yeah, and normally I like drone and drums and stuff. I kind of almost wonder if I would rather just hear straight acoustic guitar version of it. I hate to say that. Yeah. I usually like weird stuff like that, but
I liked it. It's one of my favorites on the album.
So can we talk about the lyrics more?
Yes.
Okay, like, maybe read us some of the lyrics, because that's where you're really like, wait, what?
Yes. Okay. I don't have every last word, because it's hard to understand some of them behind Chris's drone and drums. But you don't have to whimper. You don't have to cry. You don't have to beg mommy and daddy by and by. Fatty doesn't need another piece of the pie.
He keeps repeating that one. Fatty doesn't need to have another piece of pie.
Yeah. Lend an ear to the voice of reason. 'Tis the season of excess. Send up a cheer to the voice of reason. Skinny Santa, something. The world with stern derision. Boys and girls, it's your decision. And we kind of get a repeat of that. Send up a cheer for the voice of reason. Skinny Santa Claus will bless with righteous indignation for the cause of moderation. You don't have to light up everything you own. I think that means like light it on fire. You don't have to go to late night mass to atone. You don't have to beg mommy and daddy by and by. Fatty doesn't need to have another piece of the pie.
Did you take
when the season of excess?
When he said you don't have to beg mom and daddy by and by, like by and by meaning B-U-Y. B-U-Y. That's kind of how I took
probably
it.
Probably so.
Like,
yeah.
Not to buy.
And you know, buy and buy, like, over and over again.
Right.
Like yeah.
Yeah. It's a funny song. And I think, I'll be honest, as a kid, I think I just skipped it.
like, understandable.
As an adult listening to it now, I caught myself going, wait, did he just say Fatty doesn't need to have another piece of pie? That's when it first stood out. I was like, what?
And at first I couldn't figure out if it was daddy doesn't need or fatty doesn't need, but it's definitely fatty doesn't need. And so I don't know if he is being sardonic and saying, he's obviously doing the Skinny Santa thing where he's like, he's giving people dull and inane, you know, lectures on why they don't need to do things. Right.
Right.
But Also, maybe there's a bit of consumerism here, you know, being critiqued in that Fatty doesn't need another piece of the pie. Like, do we really need presents again? I don't know, though. I thought it was a good song. It's a little clever. It's a little noisy. It's a little crazy. And let's listen to the end of the song here, because it goes a little off the deep end at the very end with just all the drones and everything.
Steve Hindelong has done a ton of stuff. Like, he's also been a producer. He's recorded a lot of stuff. I have a feeling, though, this might be one of those songs he kind of keeps buried and doesn't.
on the podcast, he basically just said that he'd completely forgotten about it until he got called up by the Low Profile podcast to talk about it.
Yeah, I can see that. But no, it was a nice change.
Yeah, I agree. And at the very least, it's nice in the mix, too.
Okay. The next one is Backwoods, and the song is called Christmas Wishes. And Backwoods is part of Argyle Park, which was a kind of a Christian industrial band. Yeah, Clifton, tell us about this one.
I don't know. It's kind of weird and industrial, and I didn't listen to it much. I didn't like
it. It's super dark. Like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's not really a, you know, Christmas, usually think of putting a smile on your face, Christmas songs. This one is dark. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a reason they stuck this at the end of the album. They could not have started it with this one.
Yeah. And it you know, that said, it does take some interesting turns.
Yeah, I'm so frustrated. I'm so despondent. I feel aborted. I feel neglected. I feel unwanted. I guess I'm
covered a lot of ground there in 30 seconds.
I do like how at the very end the drum beat speeds up as everything else fades out, and it kind of sounds like a heartbeat as the song ends. Which is nice, but it's weird. I mean, he starts off, I think if I got the first line right, he's like, I can't believe it's Christmas. I spent another year and I have nothing good to show for it. And he says, yes, I hear the children singing all around me. I see smiles. I feel more, and I couldn't make it out. Something then alone. Basically, like, I'm miserable. I am terrible. Yeah. Christmas, this is awful. Christmas means nothing to me, he yells out later.
And as we heard there kind of in that part was, I feel alone. I feel neglected. I feel aborted.
Which was very interesting choice of words, right? Considering the time period and your audience. Mm-hmm. Definitely meant to shock and provoke.
Did you read the liner notes on this one?
I did.
So there's a special note here that says, Buka and Dan are really sorry for a song like this, though if it weren't for a society that puts money in front of a savior, we would have no reason to sing a song of this nature.
Okay.
Fine.
But let's be honest, they like this dark stuff. I mean, that's what they do, yes. So come on. It's definitely one of my least favorites on here, just because stylistically, mm-hmm. I don't like it. But I like that it's original.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely makes this compilation even more interesting.
I can't do the whole almost 5 minutes of this song, but like, there's a minute in there that I enjoy.
Yeah, is that all? I don't know.
Yeah, let's move on.
Okay, so this one... This might be the band, I'll say this before I say what it is, this is probably the one that I knew and I still know nothing about. Like, I cannot find anything about this band. At the time, I didn't know who they are. I still don't, more than any other. But it's called Love Bucket and Slap Happy Superfly. And the song is Blue Christmas, in parentheses, To Whom It May Concern, which is a cover of Miles Davis. Mm-hmm. But this song is not that much like, I don't know, tell us about it, Clifton.
Yeah, so the original is kind of, you know, it's Miles Davis. It's a jazzy kind of cynical look at Christmas. You know, there's a line that says sidewalk Santa Clauses are much, much, much too thin. They're wearing fancy rented costumes, false beards, and big fat phony grins. And nearly everybody's standing around holding out their empty hand or tin cup. Gimme, 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 gimme. Fill my stocking up all the way up. So it's just kind of this like cynical look on Christmas, but it's a jazzy song. Lots of trumpet, obviously. It's Miles Davis. I'll say that, as Jay said, this doesn't sound a lot like the original. It would be hard to, because I mean, Miles Davis's style here is you either copy it or you go in a different direction. Like,
right.
You don't have a lot of choices here. I'm not saying I love this song, but their choice here on how to cover the song is very interesting. I think it's a good choice. It sounds good. They do a great job with the trumpet parts, honestly, too. They sound really good, and I don't think Miles Davis would be mad at them for this, for example. But they kind of skip. There's a whole first half of the song where Miles Davis kind of sets up the mood for the song, and they just skip right into the cynical part at the end. Like, it's just...
Well,
it's very weird.
And their chorus, oh, Christmas time, like, mm-hmm. that's not in the Miles Davis song.
No.
So they, like, added a new chorus to theirs.
Mm-hmm.
That's not in it. What I wrote in my notes, I said, this is more like a stoner rock jam band covering the Miles Davis song and forgetting how it goes.
Fair.
And I like it. I actually kind of was listening to this more than I thought I would. Like, the chorus is kind of nice, and I think it's kind of like you said in the other song, Clifton, it kind of sounds like it may fall apart at moments too, mm-hmm. but it stays together, and it's not bad. It's just another weird one where they kind of just don't exactly cover the song.
Yeah, it's not one of my favorite songs in the album, but I think it's worth hearing, and it's an interesting take on this song.
And it's definitely more happier and upbeat than the one before it.
Yes, it's hard to go in the other direction
there. Yeah, that's true. All right, should we get to the last song?
Last song!
So
everyone, we've done it, guys. We're on the last one.
And this is Joe Christmas, which is a band that Clifton and I both like a lot. And mm-hmm. the song is called Christmas in Cobb County. Mm-hmm. I don't know, tell us about it, Clifton.
So this song exists. I think it's an original. I don't have a lot else to say about it. So I tried to do research on this song to figure out when it was recorded, where it was recorded. I mean, you can see where it was recorded, actually. I don't know. Like, it's just, there's no one is talking about this song. But it's a great Joe Christmas song. Like, in fact, I found in the Rugged Rock Music blog, they kind of talk about this compilation, and they sum up this song by saying, Joe Christmas Supply, an original song that sounds like pretty much every other Joe Christmas song that I've ever heard. It's not a bad song either. I agree. I haven't heard a Joe Christmas song that I don't love the vocals on and that I don't find charming in that very Joe Christmas kind of way. And that's what this is.
All right, I'm going to be a little more critical. I feel like the song kind of falls apart in the middle. Which is okay, yeah. Fine. I kind of feel like this is maybe Joe Christmas without a producer. Because, you know, both their full albums kind of at least had some production help. Yeah. This feels kind of like they're not exactly sure what they're doing with it. And it gets a bit rough sounding, I felt like, towards the end. Like, it's just a few parts. I was like, oh, you know, I get the fuzzy indie rock stuff, but it's like a little too much for me. And then I
didn't have a problem with it.
And I was trying to figure out what was going on in the lyrics. Mm-hmm. And I got something about they broke into the pawn shop unsuspected and hid behind the rocks or racks, waiting undetected, waiting to be let in. And I caught something at the end like he lied and tried to die, and cars and girls and holy cars and cops and cars and something like that. And then basically at the very end, he's like, hear the sleigh bells jingling. And then the last thing Zach says is Merry Christmas, like he actually just says it, which is a really nice way to end the album, and it's probably why they stuck the song at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I put in my notes, I said I want to like the song more, but I don't, and I think it's kind of, I honestly, and I hate to say it, and I love Joe Christmas, but I kind of think it might be the weakest song on the entire album.
It is not. Okay.
We're going to disagree on that one. Not that I love, for instance, the Backwoods song, but I feel like it's got a better, like, I don't know, I can understand more what's going on in it.
I mean, the Echoing Green cover, Do They Know It's Christmas?
All right, fair, but yeah, okay, maybe. But yeah, I wish I knew more about this. I wish I had the lyrics. I wish I had a little bit better idea what the heck's going on.
Yeah. I do kind of like Joe Christmas Unfiltered here, though.
It's fun, and I'm looking, I hope we do Joe Christmas fairly soon on this podcast, at least one of the albums, because it'd be fun to talk about.
And as we talk about that, if anyone is still listening, if you have digital versions of the Joe Christmas stuff that's not the Two Tooth and Nail albums, we would love to get it. I would love to hear that first cassette they did. I'd love to hear Oatmeal. I would love to hear some of the other stuff that they were doing, or, you know, some of the other 7 inches they did. I don't have any of it. So if anyone has that, I would love to hear it. Thanks.
Cool. Well, let's go then to the kind of the album as a whole.
So I think it's, you know, I don't know how it works as a Christmas album. I like the music overall. If Alex Parker were to call me and say, hey, I want to take you to a show, I would be like, yes, because I feel an affinity to his taste in music.
Yeah, definitely. By the way, on a side note, Alex, if you ever listen to this, I know that you said you were doing a podcast. You were in the 90s Christian Music Recovery group, or somebody in there somewhere about like a year ago pointed that out. And I know it hasn't come out, but if you would want to do an episode with us, we'd love to talk Flying Tart. Yes. So, I'm with you. I like the variety, and most of it's pretty good.
And I like the rough takes. You know, I am a fan of, you know, of more lo-fi stuff and unpolished and seeing diamonds in the rough. So that, I think there's a lot of fun to have on this album.
It was nice having such a wide variety. And luckily, some of the songs I liked enough that I was okay with them getting into the weird, like the real weird kind of weeds on some of these.
Yeah.
I also kind of liked that, again, most of these things you can't really hear anywhere else.
No.
Which was nice, because a lot of times, sometimes Christmas ones, you can just tell they're pulling these from, you know, extra tracks on other albums or something. This seemed more original, which was nice.
And one thing I said several times when we were talking about individual songs, and I want to pull together here and just reiterate, is there's a certain charm to all of these songs.
Yeah.
We've already kind of criticized it a little bit, but the Echoing Green cover of Do They Know It's Christmas doesn't, I don't feel like they brought anything of themselves to that, but, you know, Sixpence, Huntington's, Spivvies, Fantasmic, 121, Joe Christmas, they all do, you know, Steve Hinalong, even the Deatophobia one, you know, they all bring kind of this, you know, rough charm of themselves into these songs here.
What do you think about kind of the overall, like, cover packaging?
The overall packaging, I think, is really kind of great, you know, in kind of this, like, cute, ironic, sarcastic sort of way. But the cover itself is, like, okay, let's look at the back cover. The back cover has this, like nostalgic, like, almost kind of a rendition of A Christmas Tree that reminds you a little bit of the Rudolph and those other claymation kind of Christmas things to it. And it lists all the bands on it and has some nice colors. It's kind of green against yellow. It's nice. And then inside the album, you have all these kind of like cute old timey, like this nostalgic thing that we talked about, you know, that was happening in the 90s a lot, where you have like old pictures of people who are obviously posed for Christmas things. And it's kind of, they're a little cute and funny, you know? But the cover is a black cover with a little bit of snow on it, maybe, and a snowman that kind of can't help looking evil for some reason.
Yeah,
and then,
because it's like black hat, black scarf, black cane.
Yeah. And then, like, on the right side of it, next to the snowman, is a picture of, like, a Christmas tree really close up, but it's all orange, and it looks more like flame than it does a Christmas tree.
Yeah, the cover is terrible. Absolutely, it's a horrible terrible cover. Almost the rest of the packaging is nice, but the cover's terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were thinking, what happened there. Yeah. Like, you could have taken any of the other just pictures in the thing and stuck that on the cover, and it would have been better. Mm-hmm.
You could have, exactly. I don't know what they were thinking, but like, even if you just did like something related to the back cover for the front cover, it would have been 1,000 times better than whatever they were doing with this front cover.
Yeah. What did you think about the actual CD itself? I kind of thought that was funny.
The fruitcake?
Yeah, the CD is just fruitcake.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. Yeah, so like I said, the rest of the packaging is really clever and great. And, oh yeah, this is even like a Bundt fruitcake, so it looks really good, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's all really, really nice and fun, but this, yeah, just the front covers is takes away from it, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because I think Flying Tart did this, definitely at least on the first Huntington's album, too. I'm pretty sure this artwork is just kind of like stolen.
Like, yeah, right.
I mean, these are definitely older, at least from the like 60s and 70s, kind of maybe 50s too, like old Christmas photos and stuff like that that they just clearly stole from.
For all I know, they went through like old magazines and found these photos.
Uh-huh. Right? Yeah, definitely. So, but it's a nice layout. It's pretty good. Anything else kind of overall on this?
I don't think so. No.
Yeah, I mean, we touched on how it's called Christmas in Heaven, which is definitely a reference to Monty Python. Mm-hmm. This is kind of that, I guess this is kind of that weird period in Christian music where, like, stuff was exploding and there were a jillion new little labels and all kinds of alternative stuff was being put out. And so stuff like this, like, I guess kind of, I don't know if it slid under the radar, but, like, you know, you would find stuff like this at your Christian bookstore, which, I mean, I guess this is about Christmas, but there's nothing particularly like super Christian about this album. You could have found this at a regular store too. There was just so much happening at that point that you would get.
Yeah, it's almost like firmly. It's almost more firmly in the Christian industry than it is in the Christian like messaging, right? Like
yeah, because the bands are from the industry, but yeah, you're right. It's not really specifically Christian. In fact, I think anybody probably would have enjoyed this at the time.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, if they liked strange stuff.
Anyone looking at an underground label might have enjoyed this.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. Which is what Flying Tart was, and what it always should have been.
Well, normally we ask where are they now, but we had, you know, 14 different bands, so I think we covered most of them. Anything else we need to mention, Clifton?
For where are they now?
Yeah.
I said everything I know during the songs.
Do we have an award for this album?
I want to give it, like, a schizophrenic comp award, but then I know that later on we're going to do another Flying Tart compilation, yeah. And it also, like Starball also has to win the same award. Maybe this is going to be schizophrenic comp part one.
Okay.
There we go. Yeah. Knowing that part two is also going to be related to Flying Tart.
What are we going to do for our next episode?
Our next episode is going to come out on December 30th, which is the day before Christmas. Nope. Which is the day before New Year's Eve. It's the day before New Year's Eve. And we are going to do kind of a year-end wrap-up of kind of our favorite songs that we went through in our first year of doing this podcast.
Yeah, and I think we'll tackle maybe some listener mail and some other stuff we've gotten to, and just try to kind of do a nice little wrap-up and maybe a top 10 of songs, even though they're like 25, 26 years old. But, yep. You know, it'll still be fun. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Your Music Saved Us.
If you enjoyed your time with us, please leave us a review or share this episode. Visit our website, yourmusicsavedus.com, to find out all the ways to listen. We're on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Join our Facebook group or follow us to keep up with the latest or interact with us. Send complaints and disagreements to yourmusicsavedus@gmail.com.
The music in this episode is the work of lots of different artists that I'm not going to name, but we've mentioned them all here, and it's used with apologies, not permission. This album is not really available to buy, but you can find it on eBay, Discogs, places like that, and you should pick it up.
And, you know, some of these artists are still doing things. We'll have lots of links in the show notes to various resources, along with different places that you can buy some of the current things by some of these bands.
Yep.
All right, thanks, everybody.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Oh, yeah, Merry Christmas. It's that time of year.
See you next week.
Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling.